Hey, St. John, welcome to the Post-Sermon Podcast. I'm Deaconess Dahlia, and with me today is Vicar James.
Hey, how's it going?
Going well. It feels good to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you back.
I thought you did great interviewing Pastor Adam the other episode, so thank you for doing that.
Well, I appreciate it, but we really missed you.
Well, I missed you guys too. So today we will be discussing the sermon from one of your Wednesday services. So can you let us all know what the text was that you preached on?
Sure. This is Judges 6 to 8, and this is the story of Gideon. And of course, as with most of the Judges' story, it begins with the comment that the people are doing evil in the sight of the Lord again. But just like with most of the other Judges' stories, we get no commentary. We have no idea exactly what this is, all right? And so God punishes his people. He sends the Midianites and the Amalekites to oppress them. And we see this, we get this long section at the beginning of chapter 6 about how the Midianites and the Amalekites are stealing the crops, and they have to go into caves, and then we get introduced to Gideon, he's threshing wheat in a wine press to hide from the oppressors. And so then the people cry out to God, and God raises up Gideon. And this is where we get the story that everybody's familiar with Gideon, where God sends him out to deal with the Midianites with a band of 300. And Gideon is something of an unlikely hero in the story, right? So even though God shows himself to him, even though Gideon sees that the angel of the Lord and believes he's going to die because he sees him, Gideon continues to test God, and which is kind of a strange thing that goes on here. But God's very patient with him, right? Shows him all the signs that he asked for, and then he sends him out with this army of 300, and they defeat the Midian army. And that's typically where the children's story ends. But the story gets a lot darker as we move on. We get the account of him dealing with Succoth and Penuel, where he goes there and shows no mercy to his fellow Israelites, right? And then he kills the enemy leaders with his own hands, all right? And then when he comes back, you get this sort of, again, this strange, you know, dichotomy with Gideon. You know, sometimes he's doing things that are righteous, and sometimes you're really questioning what's going on. He comes back, they want to make him king. He says, no, the only king is, you know, the Lord's going to rule over you. And then he makes this ephod, you know, and it becomes something of an idol for the people. And he sets it up in the city, and it becomes a snare for him and his family. And so, and then all of Israel ends up, as the book says, whoring after it, right? So we have this really strange view of Gideon. One of the commentaries I read had an interesting quote. It said, Gideon personifies Israel and all Christians for that matter. He is capable of faithfulness, but he always gravitates towards sin. And so we kind of see that in this text.
That's a really good quote. Actually, I wanted to touch on something you said. You'd mentioned during the sermon, you mentioned right now that there is no commentary in Judges. We have the narrative, but we don't have insight into the morality of Gideon's actions, or really anyone's actions. And that can give some discomfort when we hear these stories. So how can we approach the book of Judges when we read it?
Yeah, I think Pastor touched on this last time that we talked about the book of Judges. And because we get no commentary, you know, and as Christians, we're really looking for the gospel in the text here, but we don't see it, right? It's there a little bit, you know, as God working through Gideon to deliver his people. Then you see all these other actions that you know, we're not really quite sure about what's going on here. And so Pastor touched on this last time. The book of Judges is really just a description of how things are. They're not a prescription of the way that we necessarily should act. They just describe reality. And I think that's one of the benefits of the book of Judges. It's really uncomfortable to read, but it does a pretty good job of just describing how brutal and cruel the world actually is. Yet despite that, God works through sinners to bring about his salvation for the world.
So I do have a question from a church member on the text that you preached on. Back in Judges 8, like you said, an ephod was mentioned. So please tell us, what is an ephod?
Yeah, what is an ephod, huh? That's a really weird word. So this comes up in Exodus 28 for the first time. It's an article of clothing, typically a priest's outfit. And when we read in Exodus 28, they're an elaborate garment. One of them is made for the high priest that's really elaborate. It has a breastplate with 12 gemstones on it, representing the 12 tribes of Israel. And so essentially an ephod is just this approved garment for priests, Now, Gideon's garment must have been fairly heavily laden with gold, given the text talking about how they took all these golden earrings, and it must have been very ornamental. It seems from the text, too, that the reason why the people were able to, as the text says, whore after it, and it became a snare for Gideon, is because it seems as though he set it up in the middle of the city as a statue. And so this robe was something of a statue, it seems like. You know, we can't really make that out for certain, but it does seem that it was this fixture in the middle of the city that people were worshiping, and that's probably what they're getting at there.
So it could have been an idol that they were worshiping.
Yeah, it seemed like that's where it was going. But again, we don't get any commentary on it, so we just have to make assumptions.
All right, so I'm going to move on to the central teaching of the sermon. Could you explain to us what that was?
It's quite simple. It's just that God has overcome the cruelty of this world through Christ. So we obviously, we look out in our world and we see evil all over the place. We see natural disasters. We see war. We see crime. And we see all this evil. And we often wonder where God is in all of this. But God comes down into our world, right? And he is here in Christ. And through Christ, he has overcome the brutality and the cruelty and the sin in this world. That was the central message. This isn't how it's supposed to be, all right? And this is not how it will always be.
I think you just answered then the problem that the sermon sought to identify was this brutality of the world. So I'd like to ask, why is this world so brutal? Why is there so much hate?
So the problem of evil. You're going to give me all the hard questions, huh?
Yep.
No, that's a really good question. The problem of evil is one that people struggle with. You know, even C.S. Lewis, it was a big hang up for him becoming a Christian. You know, people ask, you know, why are there earthquakes? Why are there tornadoes? Why do we get cancer? These are all variations of the question, you know, why is there evil in the world? Why do bad things happen to good people? But I think one of the problems with the question is that it assumes that there are good people, that nobody deserves what they're going to get, right? That nobody deserves death. But the Bible doesn't speak in this way. St. Paul says that we've all sinned and we've all fallen short of the glory of God, and we're sinful from conception. And this is often challenging to accept, right? You know, we look at a child and we see it is innocent and helpless and not even capable of sinning. But just because our capability of committing actual sins is limited by our age doesn't mean we don't have a sinful nature. And we can see just through observing the world that fairly shortly that baby grows up and its sinful, its ability to commit sin catches up with its sinful nature. I mean, just put a couple of two-year-olds in a sandbox with a one toy and see what happens. Somebody's getting hit in the head with a toy. You know, through Adam's sin, the whole world was cursed and it groans in futility. And all the natural disasters, diseases, viruses, and all that sort of stuff, it's all a result of the fall. It's all because of our sin. So we live in a sinful world. But you know, the problem of evil is, I think, more interesting than that. We see evil in our world and just our ability to recognize that there is evil in this world. We get the sense that there's something wrong with it. You know, in the sermon I mentioned, you know, this isn't right. This isn't how it's supposed to be. And so we have that sense that things aren't right. Things aren't how they're supposed to be. And I think that's largely because God has written his law on our heart. And we know when we see things around in our world that intuitively that just aren't the way they are supposed to be. And so we know that there's something wrong. And it is through Christ that God has come to make these things right.
I was going to go back to the Judges text as well. And you had mentioned this in your sermon that text confirms we live in a brutal world. Mm-hmm. So we even hear that and we know something is wrong with what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, and so Judges is just another fine example of this, you know, fallen world we live in, right? It's a description, right? And so, and that's how Christians should read it. It's just, this is just a description of the world we live in.
How did you intend to benefit your hearers in their faith or life?
The way that the hearers can benefit here is to just accept that this is the world that we live in. It is a brutal one. Ignoring it and trying to hide from it as we, you know, put down our phones or turn off our TVs and pretend it's not there isn't particularly helpful, right? Because it just kind of glosses over the sin. We need to accept that this is the world we live in. It's here because we are all sinners and we all contribute to this fallen world. In the same vein, we need to look for Christ to save us from this fallen world. He is the only solution to this brutal brutal and cruel world. And he has come into it, and through his death, resurrection, he has brought God's salvation to us. He's the only answer to this world, and it is not always how it's going to be.
Which then is the gospel of your sermon. I did really like that comparison that you had with the brutal world and then Jesus's encounter with brutality throughout his life. Could you expand on that?
Yeah. So, God comes into this world and he knows exactly what we are going through. He knows exactly the brutality of this world. In fact, he faced the most violent death that anyone could imagine. And he did this all for us. And, it's hard to imagine from our perspective how this could possibly happen, because here you have God going through all of this torture physically. And then, of course, on top of that, the worst of it all was his father rejecting him on the cross. But Christ had the ability to walk away from it at any time, because he is God. But he chose not to do that. He chose to stay on that cross and die for our sins out of great love for us. But yeah, so God wasn't spared any of the harshness or brutality of this world. He entered into it and suffered it willingly for our sake.
And what hope do we have for this world and for us?
But our real hope comes through the resurrection. God promises through the resurrection that there will be a new creation, right? A creation without evil, without brutality, without cruelty, without sin. Like I said in the sermon, we look forward to that new creation, a place of peace and joy.
So where do we find this sermon's teaching in the Small Catechism?
The Catechism does talk about this in a couple of places. I think the first place, of course, is in the Ten Commandments, where Luther is talking about thou shalt not murder. In this commandment, it's far more than just, killing somebody here, right? It's how we treat our neighbor as we'd like to be treated, which includes not just simply not murdering him, but also meeting his needs. And Jesus expands on this even farther in Matthew chapter 5, where he talks about anyone who's angry at their brother is liable for judgment. So he includes anger when he's also talking about hatred or murder as well. When we talk about how we should deal with this brutal world, we shouldn't respond to it in hatred. And then, of course, we also see it in the Lord's Prayer. We forgive others who trespass against us. This is probably a very hard thing to do, especially when we've been sinned against, is to want to seek vengeance and not want to forgive those people's trespasses.
What was a challenge for you with the sermon process?
Oh my, Judges is a challenge in general. I think I've discovered why.
Have you?
Yeah, it's a really hard book to preach on. There's not a lot of gospel in it. And further, we don't get a lot of commentary. So it's really kind of hard to discern what exactly is going on. One of the common themes you find yourself looking at is just, this is just a description of the world, right? This is just how it is. So yeah, so it's kind of challenging to deal with the book of Judges, because we don't find a lot of gospel there, and it's fairly brutal.
But I think even with those challenges, you did an excellent job preaching this Wednesday, and I thank you for your faithfulness with that. Thank you for listening to today's discussion. In case you missed today's sermon or want to listen to it again, the link to the sermon is in the show notes. You can also find the sermon on our church website, stjohndublin.org. If you, the listener, would like to submit a question about a sermon, please email us at podcast@stjohndublin.org. Or if you'd prefer to text a question, please text the phone number found in the show notes. Thank you again for joining us, Vicar, and for feeding us the word this week.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.